You're listening to a For the Girls podcast Flashback Friday episode. Every Friday, I reshare an older episode for new listeners who haven't heard it, or as a refresher for OG listeners who might need to hear it again as a reminder. Enjoy, and I'll see you with a new episode on Monday.
Settling is not an option for me. Everything I desire is already mine. What if you can have it all? Because every day is for the girls.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of For the Girls. I'm your host, Victoria Alario. And today we are talking with Catherine Sauzer, the founder of Sober Fit Girl, where she coaches women and hosts a podcast, which I will actually be featured on as well this week. And the episodes, this one and that one, are live at the same time. So after you listen to this episode, you should definitely head over to the Sober Fit Girl podcast and check out my interview there, because it was such a good conversation about all the things that I know you girls love to hear. And speaking of what you girls love to hear, today on For the Girls with Catherine, we dive into sobriety, dating, dating drunk, dating sober, celibacy, boundaries, and so much more, again, that I know you girls will love to hear. Of course, video is available for this episode on Spotify and YouTube, so I would love for you girls to head to one of those platforms to watch it, but wherever you're streaming, whether it's Spotify, Apple, wherever, please show some love with a rating and a review on Spotify. You could leave a comment on this episode on Apple. You could leave just a general podcast review on my podcast page. And if you're watching on YouTube, please be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. But I'm not going to waste any more time talking about any more juju stuff. Now let's get right into the episode. Okay, everyone, please welcome Catherine to For the Girls. I am so excited for this episode. We just had a little chat before. We just started talking before recording, and I know this is going to be a really good one. So Catherine, please introduce yourself to the girls and tell them all about you.
Hey, everyone. My name is Catherine. I am the founder of Sober Fit Girl. I have been working on my relationship with alcohol and just passed 5 years sober. I have a little experience in sober dating and drunk dating, so I'm just really excited to hopefully share my experience and help any ladies out, you know, with their relationship with alcohol and putting themselves out there.
Yeah. Wow. 5 years. Does it feel like a long time, or does it feel like time flew?
You know, the first year of my sobriety felt very slow because I was working through so many things and I just wanted to get through that breakdown before the breakthrough. But then as time has gone on, it's getting faster and faster and faster. Yeah. And I just want it to slow down. but you know, it comes in waves. There's sometimes where it can feel like really slow, and then there's sometimes where it can go feel really fast. But yeah, one day I woke up and I was 5 years sober and I was like, how did I even get here?
Wow. Well, that's amazing. So Thank you. I'm curious just about the journey in general. Mm-hmm. What made you even start, you know, to the journey of sobriety? And then how did it become so seriously part of your identity that it led to you building this brand of Sober Fit Girl?
Great question. So I always like to tell it this way. Like, I was sober curious before I got fully sober. I knew there was a relationship with alcohol, a problematic relationship with alcohol 3 years before I got fully sober. And that's when I kind of just started to immerse myself in the sober curious world personally. At that time, I also was a fitness coach. I had a big online platform. It was called Sweat with Cat, and it was growing. But on the weekends, I would get blacked out, and then I would, you know, miss out on a lot of career opportunities. And I just started to realize I was missing out on so much more when I did drink, because from my experience, I never was an everyday drinker. I'm a full blackout Sally party girl, like the perfect party girl identity. Okay. So, you know, then you're getting older. I got sober at 30. So from 27 to 30, I'm like, who do I want to be as a grown woman? And I just started swinging back and forth from the drunk me to the sober me. And I started to really fall in love with the sober me. And then one random Tuesday, I woke up the day after of a really bad night, not, you know, something new, just a really bad night. And my journey of moderation ended, attempting moderation. I was like, all right, this is it. I'm going all in. I promised myself I would do a year sober. And it's quite interesting because once I hit a year sober, I didn't even say like, oh, should I go back? Should I not? It was just in, it was done. And then as time went on, in around 2022, end of 2021, I started my TikTok. And that's when things, I just started sharing my experience. And it just blew up. I had so many viral videos, again, just sharing my experience of my horror drunk stories. And so I put in my website, Sober Curious Fitness, and then Sober Fit Girl just took off. That's the gifts of sobriety. Like, you don't know what you don't know when you're getting sober. Like, there's so many beautiful things that happen. But when you're on day one, it's like you have no idea. But you do know that, you know, only great things are going to happen when you start exploring your relationship with alcohol. Because if you're questioning if you have a problem with alcohol, more than likely you have a problem with alcohol.
Yeah, it's so true. And you know what? Like, I think that we don't see it as a problem because it's just normalized in general.
Right.
Like in America, I mean, I know in other countries too, but like here it's like you know, you're drinking from as soon as you're in high school, really. Like, you know, underage drinking is very normal. And as you get older, it's just part of the culture. You know, you're drinking in college, you're blacking out in college, and then you finally turn 21, and then you're allowed to actually drink. So now you have 8 years of drinking under your belt in the first place, and then it's like, now I could do this publicly, like out at the bar. Then you go out, like, it's like, that's what the lifestyle really is, like the going out lifestyle is created around, is like, that's what you do on the weekends. You go mm-hmm. out and you drink. And so naturally, I think blacking out, missing opportunities, it's just like a byproduct of that. It's just like kind of what happens when you, mm-hmm. you know, drink too much. So I don't think anyone actually sees it as a problem because it's just like, it's just what happens, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, I will say that now that I'm sober and I still have the same friend group as I did in my drinking days, you will start to see when you go out with your normal drinking friends that you always were the most blacked out of the group. Because yes, it is very normalized when you are hanging out in a party scene. But I started to realize there was a very big difference of my drinking from my friends' drinking. For example, I would wake up with the most horrific hangovers. I was debilitated in bed. I never remembered what happened. I always embarrassed myself, and my friends rarely ever had that happen. We would go on trips together, and I'm very close to my friend group, and I am the only sober one. And in my drinking days, like, I was always the worst. And I would miss out on the next day if we were on a trip together. And they would be like, Kat, you were so funny last night, aka you were so embarrassing. And I think that's the great thing about when you choose to be sober curious and you choose to go down this path, you will start to see the contrast between you, problematic drinker, if you are, and your quote, normal drinking friend. I'm not saying my friends didn't embarrass themselves. We all did. But mine was catastrophic compared them. Because I travel, I went to Ibiza with my friends. I've gone to Europe, traveled all over Europe with my friends who drink. And they don't think, you know, oh, I can only have two tonight. They're not thinking that way. I always was. I was like, let's go. First drink, second drink, third drink, shots.
Yeah, like you said, the party girl.
Yep.
Yeah. But you know what? It's so what you just said right there about how, like, you know, in the next morning, the next day, your friends are like, oh, you were so funny last night. It's like, these are the things that, like, I think make it like almost harder to get sober is the romanticizing of like the morning debrief with your friends. And it's like, you went out last night, shit got crazy. And then like, you look forward to the next morning, like debriefing with your friends, having all the funny stories, talking about like, these are things that I think create that sense of like FOMO, mm-hmm. which you talked about. And so we'll talk about FOMO, but like, it creates that sense of FOMO of like, but if I don't, then like, I'm not going to be there for this, or I'm going to miss out on that. And like, it feels like, it just feels like giving up, you know, alcohol means giving up fun and being a part of something, which ultimately is obviously not the truth. And you spoke about having FOMO and you put it into a perspective of it being the opposite, like mm-hmm. how much more you actually miss out on, how much more you gain by, you know, being sober, mm-hmm. your dignity, the money in your bank account, all this kind of stuff. So I would love for you to share that perspective on like getting that romanticized thought, like perspective out of your head, removing the FOMO and switching the perspective.
Yeah. So I always like to think of it as you are missing out on so much more when you do drink, but it's hard to see that until you start to get proof. Right? Because my baseline was partying, getting drunk, waking up, hating myself. And so to me, it was like, how am I ever going to have fun and travel and, you know, be sober? So I decided, since I already know what my party girl identity was, I wanted to get to know Sober Kat. And the more you start to get sober and then you wake up and you're proud of yourself and you have your phone and your purse and you're not next to a stranger and you're not like, what did I say last night? You wake up in peace and you work out and you eat healthy and your body feels good and you don't have a headache and your career is going wild and you're starting to meet, you know, maybe the love of your life. And that's when you start to get that proof, and alcohol will always be there. I think that's the hardest thing when people are choosing sobriety or choosing to be sober curious. They're like, well, I can never drink again. What am I going to do? And see what happens. Like, get proof. See what the sober life feels like so you can see what you're missing out on when you do drink. And try to, when you're thinking of the word, okay, fun. All right, is, for me, I always like to share from my experience, is embarrassing myself on dates, hating myself, missing out on workouts, don't remember where I am, can't find my phone, missed out on career opportunities fun? Like, is it fun? And that's when that perspective changes, when you have to start like labeling certain, you know, scenarios as fun. And it's like, no, that's actually embarrassing. That's horrifically embarrassing as a 30-year-old adult woman going, and this is one of my drunk stories, like going on a date midday, smashed, embarrassing herself. I'm at Soho House in New York City, like walking out, like they're like, she can't be served. It's noon. What, like, is that fun? Is that confident? I think with dating, it's like, how am I going to ever date alcohol free? I mean, I have to have that, you know, that sip to feel confident and bubbly, but that's not confidence. Like, confidence to me is showing up as a sober woman, even if sober curious, and you just don't want to, you know, don't, I always say don't drink on the first day, but we can go more into that. But it's like, is your drinking confident? You know, I think it's all about a perspective change, and sobriety gives you that, but you have to have some sobriety under your belt to start to see the difference of what you're missing out on when you do drink versus what you're missing out on when you don't drink.
Yeah. No, it's so true. And, you know, actually, so for those listening, there's going to be a podcast swap happening where I'm interviewed on Kat's podcast as well, that she shares with co-host. And when we just did the interview yesterday, I actually spoke about what you just said in particular, because mm-hmm. I was saying that there's this, not to say stigma, whatever the saying, there's like this like thing around alcohol where people believe that alcohol gives you confidence, where they call it like liquid courage. And it's like, oh, I can't imagine going on a date sober because I need that liquid courage. Like, oh my God, what would I say? What would I do? How would I act if I was sober? Like, the lack of confidence people have in themselves sober is actually quite scary. Like, when you really think about it, like the fact that so many people
feel that they need alcohol to be the, they're like, I need a drink to be myself. Like, which that's actually quite the opposite when you think about it. It's you're less yourself the more you drink. And yeah, there's just that saying around like having liquid courage and like needing a drink to break the ice and whatever the case is. And so when it comes to dating, I want to really talk about that. Like, I think a lot of girls put so much pressure on themselves as well to like do everything right. And they don't want to like, I don't want to say too much. I don't want to do too much. I don't want to whatever. So like they have a drink to like ease that, you know, just to bring them a sense of relief, to ease that anxiety, to calm their nerves and whatnot. And it's actually really bad because you realize how much of a lack of confidence there actually is when it comes to dating. And I'm somebody who I always went back and forth with sobriety and, you know, drinking and not drinking. And I can't say that I ever was on that level of like constantly blacking out and whatnot, but I definitely was somebody who, you know, would, I didn't like the way I felt drunk. I didn't like giving up that control over my body and my voice and waking up the next day and regretting everything that I said to somebody and that, like, you know, no filter, like I hated that feeling. And so sobriety, like not drinking, and, you know, I've gone months and I've gone years without drinking, and there's nothing has ever brought more peace than knowing like you're in complete control of what you say, what you do, how you act. And so while I was single, a lot of the time I was not drinking at all. And one thing that I would say triggered me when I was sober dating were guys who were clearly immature, who don't understand, and they would call me boring. And I hated being called boring because I guess, like I said before, like it just, drinking is so normalized that like, if you don't, it's like, why, what's wrong with you? So when I would be called boring, oh, just have a drink. Oh my God, you're so boring. Like I always knew off the bat, I would never see that guy again because like, I hated that feeling. I hated being talked to that way. I hated people putting me in this box of being boring simply because I didn't want to be drunk. And yeah, and so dating sober was, I would say, the best thing that I ever did, even going through things like that, because quite frankly, all it did was allow me to weed out the guys that were not for me. And then of course, there were the guys who were super respectful as well. So I would love to hear about your experience with dating not sober, dating sober, and then even like that middle ground, like what is sober curious to you? Does that mean that you are having a drink or are you not having a drink? Just like, give me your whole dating experience through all that.
Well, sober curious is you are exploring your relationship with alcohol, and it could look any way, such as you're, you know, drinking once a month or once a week, or you're not drinking for a month and then you're drinking to see. Like there is a huge difference between my sober curious journey and my sober journey. I was not saying I want to be sober when I was sober curious. I was just like, I'm curious, you know, what is this sober life? But the day I chose to be sober, it's an energy, it's a feeling, it's a knowing that like you are done attempting moderation. Like that's the biggest thing for me when I went from sober curious to sober. It's like, all right, I've tried everything. Like I hate moderation. I don't even want to do it. It's not working. I want to be sober. So I always like to share that, like, in sober curious is always usually the path into sobriety. Many women come into the Sober Fit Girl and they are sober curious and oops, I'm sober. You know, so it's okay to be curious. It's okay to be curious about your relationship with alcohol. It's actually a great thing. Like that means you want to improve your life. As for dating, drunk dating was bad for me. Very, very bad. I come from, my father passed away when I was 21. I have very strong daddy issues. Let's just be honest. Like I, in my childhood, like my dad really did favor my sister. I just want to be honest, which created a lot of, insecurities in myself. And here's the gift of sobriety. I didn't even know this until I got sober. Like you, when you remove alcohol, you actually can learn about why you attract certain people in your life. And I always attracted, you know, not the greatest guys in my drinking days. And the thing is I needed to be liked so bad by every single guy, doesn't matter who you are, in my drinking days, okay? So I would go into the date and be like, okay, well, I don't like myself. I struggle with serious insecurities around men, so of course I'm going to drink. And then when you drink, it's like you're doing it because you are insecure. It's like you said, it's like I feel like I have to drink to be secure. That's a problem. And then when you get sober, like for me, I realize now, I'm not saying I'm perfect at attracting the greatest men in my sobriety, but I can see the red flags faster. I can learn about myself faster. I can learn about who I want in a partner faster. And like the biggest thing too is, you know, if you're sitting at a dinner table with a guy and he's pushing drinks on you, what do you think is his intentions? Let's be honest. You know, he wants to hook up with you. And that's not the type of person I want to be with. So me being sober lets me see what his intentions are or his insecurities. And for me, I know this, like my dream man list, he's going to be obsessed that I'm sober. And and I can date men who drink. So it, as long as he's confident and, you know, not a full-blown alcoholic, you know, like my dad was, but at least like if he's a normal drinker and he's like, I love that you're not drinking. Like I'm confident and, you know, I don't have a problem with alcohol. Like it's okay. But if you're sober, you actually can see if you like the person, not like me. Like I would do anything for a guy to like me. Get blacked out, get drunk, sleep with them, you know, even if I didn't like them. So again, it's about perspective of how, if you're getting drunk and you're finding yourself with, you know, not the greatest guys, why don't you just not drink and see if you can see those red flags faster? And I don't know anyone who's regretted not drinking, you know, on a date.
Yeah. I know. I can't imagine being like, I wish I was drunk on that date. Like, yeah. I don't think that that's ever been said, ever.
Right. I wish I was drunk. I wish I blacked out. I wish I got blacked out so he would like me. That, just say that out loud. I'm going to drink so this guy likes me, drunk me. So that means he's not going to like the sober me. Like you said, he's going to think I'm boring. Mm-hmm. And I'm not boring. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes I want to be like, do you want to see me drunk?
You don't want to unleash that version of me, actually. It's in both of our best interests.
Right.
But it's true. Yes, there's a vast difference in men who are mature and confident and men who aren't. And like, you know, I think it shows you right there. Like if a guy is trying to convince you to drink, like whatever, like that in itself shows you the lack of confidence in that man and what that man's intentions are. So like, yes, so much of this conversation in dating and what you're looking for should be less about, does he like me? And more about, do I even like this person? Because I think that people show who they are really clearly. But if you have those beer goggles on, you can't see it. It's too blurry. We romanticize. We look at the little things and we're like, oh, I can look past that. Like, yeah, because you just want a partner so bad. You just want to be in a relationship so bad. But it's not until you can like really see things 2020 clear vision that you're like, I actually like, no, this is not my match. This is not my person.
And there is some guys who, fine, if you want to be with a girl who has wine and goes and travels with you and goes to wineries and you want her to have wine, fine. That's just not going to be me. I actually was dating this guy in Miami when I lived there. Just we went on a few dates and he was totally fine that I didn't drink, but his preference was he loved to go out to clubs. And so I morphed myself into the sober club girl. And I just came to find like as a sober person through that experience, like I then put on my list, like, I don't want to date a guy who likes to go to a club every weekend. That's the cool thing in sobriety. You're not going to know. For me, I didn't know who I wanted to be with. I started to gather information of through what I don't want. So I don't, like, through this experience with this guy, I don't want to date a guy who goes to the clubs. Okay. I have that information now. Or I'm okay. Like, I didn't know if I was okay dating a normal drinker guy. And I found out I'm totally cool with that. I feel comfortable. I'll go to wineries and have non-alcoholic wine. And through that experience, I gathered that. Like, there's just, you can gather so much information about yourself and evidence about yourself going on dates sober. Like, think of it as you're just gathering information of who you want to be with. But when you're drunk, I don't know. Like, right. I don't know anything about myself.
Right.
You know, or what I want in a partner.
Right.
So I hope that helps too, because sober dating is not easy. It's not easy by any means. Like, it is the one thing I struggle with, honestly, the most in my sobriety. And there's like all different reasons why it's not easy, but drunk dating is harder.
Yeah. What, if any, that you feel comfortable with sharing, like what would be a reason why you find it to be hard for yourself?
Like I said, I struggle with, you know, a lot. I mean, the last 2 years, when you go through a sober journey, there's like layers. It's like peeling back an onion, okay? And like you get rid of the alcohol and then you work on grief or however your timeline is. And then the last 2 years, I really worked on my relationship with the opposite sex, like the last three. Like that's what came up is like my attachment, you know, styles, and a lot of my daddy issues came up. And that's, you know, knowing these things, I kind of have fear going on dates, putting myself out there, don't want to get hurt. My career's doing great, you know, and I have been hurt multiple times in my sobriety. So sometimes I'm kind of like, I don't really want to, you know, put myself in these positions to get hurt, because you are more sensitive when you are sober. I think because you are showing up as your true you. So when you are rejected, it can hurt more.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're not wearing that shield. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like the alcohol was almost like an armor in the sense right. that like protected you, quote unquote, mm-hmm. From that pain. But then mm-hmm. without it, you're like straight vulnerable. It's like, this is me. So if I get shot, like it's hitting me. That makes sense. What are some boundaries that you've like noticed that you've instilled? And it doesn't only have to be with like dating. It could be friends, family, like just any boundaries that you feel like you had none of, you know, prior to being sober that now you have.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't taught boundaries as a child. I grew up in a very toxic home. Dad alcoholic, mom, you know, not mentally stable. Cops were called in my house. Mom was very verbally abusive. Dad was very verbally abusive. I mean, I did not know anything about mindfulness whatsoever until I got sober, because truthfully, when you get sober, you're almost like a little infant, you know, and you have to reparent yourself. And I've done so much healing to understand. I didn't even know what a boundary was when I got sober. Okay. So, I think just learning and understanding and trying things, like for me, my beginning 2 years of my sobriety, I actually lived in Bali, Indonesia. So it was truthfully like the best boundary ever. Like, I was taken away from my friends. I was not in social situations, and I just learned to love myself. And then I brought back home those tools of like what I need. And when I first started setting boundaries, I almost got physically sick because I was such a people pleaser. I was so afraid people were going to abandon me. But I came to find that when I started setting boundaries, one, you'll find out who, you know, benefited from you not having them. And two, you just start to realize like we both benefit from me having a boundary, like with my family or my sister, because then you're pouring into your cup and then you can better help serve other people. As it comes to like boundaries with dating. So obviously I'm over 5 years sober. So, you know, I can go on dates and be around. I go to nightclubs. I've traveled Europe, you know, sober with drunk people. I think it just kind of depends on where you're at in your journey, but your sobriety has to come first. So don't put yourself in a position where you're, you know, a guy is wanting you to go out to a nightclub, you know, in your first 6 months of sobriety. Like, what would be that won't benefit anyone, mm-hmm. you know? So I guess it really just depends on like which area you're talking about. And with friends, I think just if someone doesn't like you being sober, it's they're benefiting from you being drunk in some way. And you'll start to see that. And now just being where I am, it's easier to set boundaries because I know who I am and I know what's going to trigger me or what type of friends I want. So, you know, you just got to like try setting a boundary, see how it goes. And more than likely, you're going to be really happy. I've never regretted setting a boundary or letting a toxic person go out of my life.
Right.
I'm not sure if that really answered your question.
No, of course it does. I noticed that a big common theme, like another thing that you just mentioned being like abandonment, I think a big common theme when it comes to sobriety and boundaries and putting yourself first and all that, there's the mindset of like a fear of like you're losing something and you're missing something. And the crazy realization is that it's really all mental because it's not actually true. Like you don't actually lose anything. When you really think about it, it's like, okay, so when I don't drink alcohol, the only thing that I quote unquote lose is, you know, not being plastered and making a fool out of myself, which there's no loss there. And then when I set a boundary and say like distance myself from like a certain friendship or relationship with, you know, somebody who didn't make me feel great about myself sober, clearly had some sort of advantage or benefit to me being drunk. Again, like that's not a loss there. Like that's not a good friend to have or person to have in your life. So like at the end of the day, like it's like, you know, that saying that's like the trash is taking itself out. It's like, you know, it's like the quite frankly, like all you're doing is making space for what better serves you. And yeah, like there's this big common theme with sobriety and boundaries. And I talk about this even in my confidence coaching of like just like in helping women raise their standards, because when you raise your standards and you have these requirements, you know, in life, granted, there's going to be people who don't meet those standards, who don't match those standards, who can't fulfill those requirements, and therefore they leave your life. It's all this thing over and over of us constantly feeling like we are going to be the ones to lose or miss out on something, when in reality, all we have is so much to gain. So it's really interesting even hearing you say that, like to put that into perspective, like from you, it's like, that right there is another prime example. Like, why do we constantly think that like we can't or shouldn't do these things to better our lives? Like we have a fear that we're missing out on something, and it's so not true.
Well, if you dissect the fear, okay, let's dissect the fear. If I get sober, I won't find love. Okay. Well, if I stay drunk, will I find love? Will I find the healthy love? Will I find the love of my life? Probably not. You know, I think when you really take a look at the fear and you try to see it from a new perspective, it really helped me. So again, if I choose sobriety, my fear is that I will die alone. Okay. But if I stay drunk, won't I end up, you know, one, if alcohol is serious, you could die, you know, or two, like I never was going to find my dream man drunk. I was even in a long, long-term relationship before I got fully sober. Love of my life. Love of my life. We drank and we are no longer together because of alcohol. And I think if we both got sober, like we would still be together 1,000,000%. You know, so I knew that even in that moment, like if I kept drinking, we were, you know, towards the end and we ended because of alcohol. So if you think about it that way too, like let's say you are in a relationship and you're like, well, my partner and I are drinking because that's how we connect. Trust me, on this side, if you drink, connect on alcohol and then, you know, things are going wild and crazy in your relationship because of alcohol, you're not going to last. You know, yeah. So you really have to think about that fear of, you know, if I stop drinking, I'm going to be alone. Like, trust me, like you're going to end up alone if you are a drinker like me.
Yeah.
And I would rather be alone in my sobriety in peace than ever be in a relationship where there's so much alcohol, but there's no peace. There's just none. And that's just from my experience and the relationships that I've had in my drinking days. I haven't had any long-term relationships in my sobriety, though, to be honest.
Yeah. My bookworm girls are going to love this, especially if you're anything like me and you love when your reads get under your skin and you have no idea what's coming next and the suspense won't let you put the book down. That is definitely The Wedding Vow by Dandy Smith, and you need to get your hands on it immediately. It's a domestic suspense thriller where nothing is quite as it seems. It has everything you want in a suspense novel. Secrets, lies, emotional damage, and the deeply unsettling feeling that somebody absolutely should not be trusted, and of course, an affair. This book is pretty much one that takes the whole shiny, romantic, my husband is my rock idea and just casually sets it on fire, because beneath all the picture-perfect appearances, The Wedding Vow is packed with tension, deception, and the kind of twists that make you stop and go, oh, wow, so everyone here is making terrible choices, which for me is, of course, ideal reading. Imagine realizing you don't know your husband at all, and the truth and shocking secrets are a lot more dangerous than you'd ever imagine. This book is full of that addictive thriller energy where you think you know what's going on, and then the author basically leans in and says, you really thought, huh? So if you like books by Geneva Rose or even Freida McFadden that keep you on the edge of your seat, then you are going to love this one. The Wedding Vow by Dandy Smith is available now wherever books are sold, so go grab your copy today. Starting something new isn't just hard, it can be terrifying. So much work goes into this thing that you're not entirely sure will work out, and it could be scary to make that leap of faith. Trust me, I know. When I started this podcast, I wasn't even sure what I was doing. What if no one listens? What if I do something wrong? What if no one buys my products? All the questions that we're all asking. Now, I know that I was right in believing in myself and launching this podcast despite all the fears and hesitations. It also helps when you have a partner like Shopify on your side to help. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from household names like Skims and Rode to brands just getting started. You'll be asking yourself questions like, but what if people haven't heard about my brand? Well, Shopify helps you find your customers with easy-to-run email and social media campaigns. And questions like, what if I get stuck? Not to worry, Shopify is always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. So it's time to turn those what-ifs into with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/forthegirls. Go to shopify.com/forthegirls. That's shopify.com/forthegirls. If you're obsessed with romanticy like I am and searching for a book series that combines monster romance, epic fantasy, and a love story that hurts in the best possible way, you need to pick up The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole. This is the second book in the best-selling Gods and Monsters series, following Diana, a powerful shapeshifter bent on revenge, and Sam Keel, the immortal god king who was once her enemy. This series just totally does it for me because of its emotional depth. I love damaged hero energy, which is exactly what you get with Sam Keel, who's powerful enough to shake worlds, but still refuses to give up on the woman he loves. If you love slow burns, enemies to lovers, forced proximity, incredible banter, high-stakes fantasy, and morally gray characters, you'll want this on your TBR immediately. So pick up The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole wherever books are sold in print and in ebook.
Well, listen, that's because now you're more selective. Your standards are raised. You're not going to just accept any old thing. Like, oh yeah, he likes me, so like, sure, whatever. Like, that's just so... I always say, like, there's so much strength in singleness and in sobriety because it's a choice every single day. Because it's real easy to pick up a drink. It's real easy to get on Hinge and find a guy to go sleep with. Like, it's very easy. Like,
look at what we look like. You think that we are single, we're single because we couldn't get a man? Like, get the fuck out of here. Like,
I love you. Thank
like,
you.
Are you on crack? Like, no.
People look at me like, why are you single? There's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you're not going to tell me, like, because I remember, like, back when I was single and I was, like, posting things on TikTok and, like, guys, you know, like, the trolls, they would always try to, like, comment, like, talking shit. I'm like, you're not going to tell me that I'm single because I can't get a man. No one's ever going to convince me of that. I can get a man. Like, that's not the problem. The problem.
Imagine going on your page as a man and commenting that.
Yeah.
It's so gross.
Right. Exactly. I'm like, the problem is so certainly not that men are not attracted to me. That is not the issue. So let's start there. Okay. So like no one's going to, like, at least for me, as somebody who's very socially aware and has high emotional intelligence, like, I would never look at you and be like, oh, well, you're single and sober because, you know, like, not like, no, like, it's because of the fact that, like, now you finally could put yourself on the pedestal, and maybe beforehand you couldn't do that. And so now that you could put yourself on the pedestal and now you're looking down at everybody, it's like, none of you are worthy of this. So, but you'll find them. You'll find them. It's just, yeah. It takes more time. There's so much strength in singleness and in sobriety. And so, like, it's a choice to, you know, stay that strong. But by the time that you do meet your guy, like, it's going to be, like, magnetic. It's just mm-hmm. going to be really powerful. So that, no, that don't, for anybody listening, like, the fear of, like, thinking like, oh, but being sober, being single, like, then what? What do I have? Like, trust me, there is so much more to life. There's more to life than alcohol, and there's more to life than a man. There's more to life than a man. Like, this is coming from someone who is engaged, because people, like, always when I was single would be like, do you like being single? And I'm like, you're essentially asking me if I like my life. Like, I am single. So being single is, like, kind of like my identity. It's who I am. It's my life. Like, I was very independent. I was doing things on my own. Like, you're really going to ask me if I like that? Because the alternative would me being say, no, I don't like my life. Like, and why do we want that for anybody? We don't, like, you know what I mean? So this is coming from somebody who is getting married in a few months. Trust me, being single, you'll be fine. Like, being single, it's okay. You could want a partner, but trust me, it's okay. Like, life goes on, I promise. With that being said, I love what you were saying about moderation around drinking, and, like, how it's just easier to be fully sober than it is to, you know, do things in moderation and dabble here and there. And I, on that same token, I kind of want to shift it to talking about, like, intimacy and celibacy mm-hmm. and dating, because that was something I really had to put my foot down, was while I was single and dating, I was celibate. I used to talk about this on TikTok all the time, which now I kind of think about as, like, wait, that's a little crazy that I was just, like, out there talking about my lack there of a sex life. But now, you know, I'm reflecting and I'm looking back and I'm like, yes, like, I actually, like, that was something that I had to be really firm on, because it brings you, like you just said, the peace of mind. Like, it brings you so much peace of mind of knowing that sex is off the table, because when you're not celibate and you're going on dates, sex is always in the back of your head. Like, is he going to invite me over? Do I have to invite him over? Like, what if he tries to hook up with me? What am I going to do? And similar to alcohol, is like, alcohol is going to be there. Like, should I, shouldn't I, what should I not do? So with sex and celibacy and intimacy, it's like, you know, he is really cute. There is chemistry. So should I, shouldn't I? So you kind of dabble with certain guys. You pick and choose who you'll hook up with, who you won't hook up with. Whereas when you're celibate, it's just off the table. And that peace of mind of, like, it's a no. I don't care how cute you are. I don't care how much chemistry we had. We're going to have to progress this to get to that point, no matter what. And it brings you that peace of mind of knowing, like, even if he invites me over, I have the power to say no. So I'm curious for you, like, how, if at all, celibacy and intimacy, how intimacy and sobriety go hand in hand, and if you've experienced celibacy throughout this journey.
Yeah, I really love this conversation. And listen, when I was going through my journey, if I would have came across your page, I would have followed. So there is women out there that really needed to hear what you were sharing. So thank you. I think it's something that I'm working on sharing more, because it's something that I really, to be honest, really, really struggled with. In my drinking days, I was the girl who would go out intentionally to find someone to hook up with. And I would call every single person just to get that fix after. I am okay sharing that. I understand. I was doing the best I could with the resources I had available. I saw sex as love. I was looking for any kind of attention, any kind of love, because I did not have any in myself. So then you're looking outside of yourself. So when I got sober, it's funny because in my drinking days, right, I would be just hooking up with people thinking I was confident sexually. But truthfully, in the end of the day, when you're drinking to have sex, it might show that you lack sexual confidence, right? So when I got sober, I ended up moving to Bali, right? I had not had sex in about 8 months. And I was not someone really who had sober sex, besides my long-term relationship and my drinking days. And so I was actually terrified to have sober sex with someone who at the time was my friend. And I was like, hey, like, I trust you. Let's hook up, see what happens. And it really did nothing for me because I wasn't truthfully like wanted to be with this person. I think, again, I was just looking for something outside of myself to feel better because I was lonely. I struggled with codependency. So like being alone was like so scary. So after that relationship, I moved to Miami. Okay. So I don't want to say like I chose celibacy. I think that if there was an opportunity, I potentially would have had sex with someone, but I spent 2.5 years, no sex, no kissing, no nothing. And let me share, if anybody's listening, if you think of feminine energy, my business blew up. Like, I mean, I even have the chills, like skyrocketed. I didn't give a shit about guys. I was like, I want Sober Fit Girl to blow up. I want my business to blow up. And I know this because, and why I truly believe that if I had sex in those 2.5 years or got into a situation where I was like, because I do, when I like someone, it's like, I really fucking like them. And like, I put a lot of energy into that person, especially if they don't like me. I'm like me, even in sobriety. So my business blew up. Now, I broke my celibacy, okay, with someone. And all I wanted was my celibacy back because it fucked me up, to be honest. Like, it really did some damage because it was a whole traumatizing experience. And I found out, like, I now probably will not have sex with someone until I am in a committed relationship, which I'm, you know, I really, really have such a belief that when you're not giving your sexual energy to someone, especially someone who you don't want to give it to or you feel forced to, you are going to take all of that energy and put it somewhere else. I'm not saying like sex is bad whatsoever, but this is just my experience. And now I'm very discerning about who I sleep with. I've even tried casual sex recently. I hated it. Like, it's not for me. And because like after I was like, oh, I just feel so gross, you know? But this is what you learn in sobriety. It's like you get a chance to like explore your sexuality. And I will say that I am so much more sexually confident in the bedroom than I ever, ever have been. And I am an extremely sexual person. So it was really cool to see myself from a completely different perspective that actually alcohol made me not cute sexually, to be honest. And the cool thing about this too is that if you're listening, a lot of women think that to grow sexually confident is by sleeping with people, whereas it's more of an internal thing that I grew so confident in myself, my looks, my career, my everything, that when you do have sex with someone, you will feel confident because you are confident in yourself versus let me sleep with a bunch of people and try different things and get confident. That's from my experience. I'm not sure if you can relate or if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know what? I will say that it's so true because I came out of celibacy more sexually confident, which, which
crazy.
Which doesn't make sense because it's like the lack of sex, you know what I mean? It's like the lack of.
And it's hard to try to explain that.
Yeah, I can't even put it into words, but I will say, I think a lot of it has, or at least for me, like had to do with, having confidence in having sex with that partner. Like, correct. I think your partner is really important. And 100%. Like your connection to that partner is really important. Your actual interest, because like you said, like you kind of did it with a friend just to do it because it was your friend, but like you didn't really want to do it. Then like, you're never going to come out of that with a good experience. Like it's never, you're never going to come out being like, oh, I see, I doubted it and it was great. Like, no, it's like when you go into it with those doubts, like that's what's going to come to fruition. Like that, that feeling of like, I don't really know, like the second guessing yourself, like it's only gonna, you know, become the reality of like, why did I even do that? And I know what you mean when you're like, when you like broke it and you're like, now you're like, I wish I could get it back. Like, it's like the damage is done. Like you can't get it back. But, you know, like then that's it. It's day one again. You know, like you start over again. And like you just, I think what's most important and what the biggest like lesson that's been said over and over throughout this is like you through being really firm in these things, whether it be sobriety, be celibacy, like through being really firm where you don't do things moderately, you don't give yourself any like wiggle room and bending, is that you learn so much that by the time that like you come out on the other side, you're like, you're that much better of a human being because of it. So then when, if you do crack or whatever the case is, you're like, oh no, I'm going back to the, like, I felt so much better doing this thing. Like, but you have to remove yourself from that thing, like sex or whatever, for so long. Like it has to be a long enough time away from it. Cause otherwise if it's just like, you know, I tried it for a weekend and whatever, and I'm back to it. Like there's not enough time to like remove yourself from that. Once you give yourself that time, I think for you at that point, it was 8 months or whatever the case was, like you really like, you learn so much, you grow so much, you get so strong. And like now you're essentially like your brain is rewired. You think differently, you act differently, you feel differently. And it's like, I can't even go back to that version of me because I'm not that anymore. I'm detached from that. So that's a big thing that you learn.
Share this to your listeners too, that when I broke my celibacy after 2.5 years, one thing I realized in myself, and I want to share this to your listeners to help, is that I always led with sex. So I always led with confidence sexually more than I did just me, like my personality. I always have been more confident sexually. So in that relationship that I had over a year ago, the one I broke my celibacy, I led with sex. And so when you lead with sex and you hook up with someone, more than likely you are going to miss the red flags. So this is what I suggest doing. And you know, there's just sometimes you can't control yourself. Okay. But if you're really going in there, then there's that strong sexual connection, which I had with this person, like intense, like holy shit. I missed out on all of his red flags, every single one of them that was outside of sex. So just if you're listening, to something to think about, you know, is potentially waiting can help you see if you're looking for a long-term partner.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that you led with sex more, or?
You know what? I think that what it was, it kind of goes back to what you were saying of like wanting to be liked. So like the guy led the way. So like I didn't really say no. If a guy invited me over, like I would go over his house, you know, like I wasn't going to be like, no, because like, oh my God, it's a Friday. You're picking me. Like you're calling me. So I'm going to come, you know. Meanwhile, he probably asked 15 girls what they were doing. And you're like, I'll take it. And I was the one who took it. Like, yeah. So it's like, you know, I think for me, like, there were so many guys that I liked, and I actually, one of my very first podcast episodes, like I'm talking, I launched For the Girls in 2021. So 4 years ago was, the title of the episode is like, women fall for sex and men fall for emotion. And it was like one that like broke, like everyone was going crazy over it because they're like, no, it's the other way around. Men are the ones who want sex. Women are the ones who want emotion. I'm like, no, that's what we go for, but that's not what we fall for. Women fall in love through intimacy and sex and being close and that proximity, like being with a man physically, like in his presence, like, oh, but I slept over and we had breakfast in the morning. That's what makes us think like we're in this relationship now. Like I stayed over and I stayed till 12 o'clock the next day. That intimacy, that proximity, being in his bed makes a woman think we're close now. We're in this relationship now. And that man could do the same thing with another woman the next day. And he might be the one who initiated that, but that's not what's going to make him feel right. close to you and fall in love with you. A man falls in love with the woman he has the most emotional connection with. Whereas women can emotionally connect with everybody. I'm emotionally connected to you right now. We're having an emotionally available conversation, an emotionally intelligent conversation. Like women can meet a girl in the bathroom at the bar and have an emotionally intelligent conversation and be like, I just connected with this girl and now we're going to do lunch. Like we can just talk. We can connect with anybody. Men cannot. So when they do have that connection with a woman, that's when they fall in love. So it's like the thing that we're best at and that we do the most is actually like reverse of how we fall in love. And so for me, it was true. I had a guy friend who we were kind of like a friends with benefits situation. And I, at that time, this is again, I recorded this 4 years ago, but the relationship was before that. So it was like 5-6 years ago. Where I felt like the more I hooked up with him, then maybe we would end up together, you know? And like, I just kept thinking like, yeah, if we have this friends with benefits connection, whatever, like yada, 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 long story short, like, no, he was never going to like me just because I kept hooking up with him. Like that wasn't what was going to happen. And so, you know, we didn't have that connection that he, you know, was looking for in a woman. And so it's not to say that I like led with sex. I don't think that I did. Maybe I did. Maybe I have something to discover and look inward a little bit more on, but I definitely put the ball in a man's court. So if he called me to come over, I was there. And whether sex or not happened didn't matter. It just like was like, I was like, yeah, I like you. So I want that proximity. I want to be in your presence. And so, yeah, I think that it was like putting too much emphasis on how he feels about me. And way less on like how I even felt about myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, you know, only good things can happen when you don't drink on a date.
Yeah.
You know, only bad things could happen when I drink. And you are choosing sobriety is truthfully the most confident and brave fucking thing you can do.
Yeah.
Bravest. So yeah. Your standards are like for yourself.
Yeah.
Like choosing to be alcohol free. And again, sober curious, whatever that looks like, is you are raising your standards in every area of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So through my experience with dating sober, like I have had low standards in my sobriety and I have accepted bare minimum, but it's showing me what I do want through what I don't want. And that's, you know, really important. Don't beat yourself up. Like I beat myself up so much for that. The person I was with, intimately a year and some ago, like, why didn't I not see the red flags? Gosh, I would have. And it was really a rough, like emotional hangover after we spent time together. And it's just, you know, I learned about myself. Like, don't beat yourself up on this journey. It's like the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, 100%. So a couple little things to wrap this up. I want to know, what are your key tips on still feeling sexy and maintaining confidence when being sober? And it could be dating sober or even just like being out with your girlfriends. Because like we said before, that a lot of people normalize alcohol bringing them that liquid courage. So if you're removing that from the equation, what's your key tip on having that confidence and still feeling sexy, completely sober.
I mean, always go out with your friends that make you feel the hottest. Like, my best friends are, we're obsessed with each other. Like, they are, I call them the loves of my life. Like, I will text them and be like, thank you for being the love of my life. Like, my best friends are that. And I think that's one of my favorite is, like, always going out with people who want you to look hot. Like, don't hang around women who, you know, are judging each other and, you know, trying to chase, like, what guy can each of you get? Just, that's a huge one for me, is my friends make me feel so good and so confident. And a huge thing for me is my relationship with my body. You know, I really work hard on what I eat and how I treat myself and resting and skincare and all these things that I couldn't do in my drinking days. And then the last one is perspective. And I know I keep repeating myself with this, but it's the would you rather game. Would you rather be the more quiet, confident girl, graceful, speaks slow, listens, is a part of the group, lets other people talk, showing up and like, yeah, I'm gonna have a soda water with lime and just like be you. Like, those types of women I would see out, I'm like, I want that. I want that. So get yourself, I call them expanders, like expand women that you, that expands your mindset of like who you want to be and focus on that versus I'm going to fit in. I have to drink sexy, sober. I mean, getting drunk is sexy. It's really about perspective and like wearing the clothes you want to wear. Like, I have my own style now. I don't try to be like anybody else. That's what makes me feel better, is like not comparing myself to other people. And again, I never got that until I got sober. In my first 2 years of sobriety, though, I was so insecure. I like couldn't even – I didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I wanted to be. But I knew who I didn't want to be, and I didn't want to be the drunk, sloppy girl anymore. And I hope that helps. Just – The big one, though, is having solid, amazing girlfriends that are obsessed with you. Like, I'm obsessed with – I'm a girl's girl. Like, yeah. I want all my friends to be hot, you know, dating the hottest people, be successful, you know, have the sickest bodies, be rich as shit. Like, just them to have all of the things. And if you're hanging around women that are consistently picking and comparing, it's going to hard to be feeling confident.
Yeah. No, it is so true. It's so true. And the last one would be, if you have any like tangible, any little nuggets, like what would be something that you could share with a girl who's like, all right, I hear you. I'm ready to do this. And, you know, I'm ready to date sober, but I need that one little piece of advice on how to loosen up on a date. Like, I'm going into this date completely sober, whereas typically I would use a drink or take a shot to loosen up a little bit. How can I ease my tension sober?
So for me, community is the most important, you know, and I know that's, I don't even know if that's like the most perfect answer, but like for me, like checking in with someone before a date to journal, like, what is this date going to look like if I drink and what is this date going to look like if I'm sober, always eases my mind. And also this one just came to my mind. The first 30 minutes of any social situation is going to feel hard. But once you pass that first 30 minutes of, like, you know, the initial when you sit down at a dinner table, it's like everybody's ordering drinks. Mm-hmm. Like, that can feel such anxiety. But just like say to yourself, like, I just got to get through these first 30 minutes. And then my favorite tool to conversations in dating is be interested instead of interesting. So asking questions, because I, in the, my first, like, you know, when I've sober dated before I had this tool, I would get asked questions and then I would almost overshare. So it started, and then the conversation's going. Now I'm like telling him about my dead dad and like, whoa, like, slow down. So like, you share less and ask more and listen more, which really helps me just like with everything, even meeting new friends. But again, the biggest tool is if you are really struggling with alcohol and you want to date, having a mentor and a community is the number one. Like, hey, I'm going on a date. Like, my clients will be like, hey, Kat, I'm going on a date. This is who he is. And I'll be like, okay, like, what's the location? Where are you guys going? How are you feeling? What's your fear? And most of the time, like, the big thing is I'll have to say to them, like, the environment is not going to benefit you. So trying to say, hey, you know, maybe can we do this instead? And another one too that has really helped me, and this is your choice if where you're at on your journey, is I don't tell people I'm sober. I don't say like – I will even say like, do you want to go grab a drink? That's me now. And then when I'm there, I'll just say like, oh, yeah, I'm not drinking tonight. Like I think like, you know, just – ease into what you want to share. And of course, at some point, but then they're actually getting to know the you versus, okay, this girl's sober. And then they're creating all these stories. Whereas you want to create your own story. That's really helped me too. But then there's, you know, if you're in the first year of sobriety, it might be really important for you to say like, I don't drink because I can handle this, you know, sober dating easier now.
Right. Yeah, I love that. And it's like, you don't, it doesn't have to be, I think that people get nervous about, because girls would even say to me, back when I would make those TikTok videos talking about like being celibate, whatever, girls would say to me like, how do you tell a guy you're celibate? I'm like, you think that I'm telling a guy that I'm celibate? Like you think that I'm matching with a guy on Hinge and being like, so nice to meet you. Just want to let you know, like, I'm certainly not fucking you. Like, no, I'm not saying that. Like,
I mean, these days I might.
No, like I didn't say it at all. Like if there was ever an invitation or something, I would just say no. Like, just no. Like, I don't think that you have to broadcast it and tattoo it to your forehead. Like, you can, it can be as simple as just saying no. No, I don't want to. No, I'm not interested. Or just no, period, because no is a full sentence. And it's just no. And then, like, as you get to know someone, then you could share, you know, a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, I did not think that it needed to be what I led with. Like, I don't think that you need to, off the bat, say, you know, by the way, I'm sober. I mean, or by the way, I'm celibate. Like, I just don't think, like, it goes back to the very original point of, like, all of these things are so normalized that it's almost like crazy to say that you don't partake in it. So mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, I don't think that we have to feed into that. I think we can just normalize not doing the thing.
There was this one time after my 2.5 years of celibacy, I told the guy, I was like, I haven't had sex in 2.5 years. Now, this is, you can see this from multiple perspectives. Like, I do feel that I overshared, but also at the same time, he then ghosted me because he didn't want me to get attached to him because I was celibate. And then if I had sex with him, he was like, oh, then she'll want to be, you know, my girlfriend. So at some reason, I'm so happy I did, because then we didn't have sex because he wasn't looking for a long-term relationship. But then also on the flip side, I felt like I overshared. So, I mean, you can't do wrong either, you know?
That was a blessing.
I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I told this guy, like, while we're making out, like, just so you know, I haven't had sex in 2.5 years. And he literally didn't have sex with me.
He's like, never mind. He's like, let's rewind. But like, no, it's the best thing that you could have done. Yes. Because it's so weeding out the wrong people. Yeah. It's just eliminating. Like, we cannot think that we are doing anything wrong by telling the truth.
Right.
Like, the truth of the matter is, I've been celibate for 2.5 years.
And trust your intuition too. Yeah. You know, like, you know, if you feel like you want to feel safe to tell the person and you're going to gather information about them, great. Like, you can't do wrong.
Right. No, it's so true. You know what? I think that, like, us women who overshare, we have a gift because we scare people away. Oh, no. And, like, that was a thing for me that, like, I hated when I was single and dating. Like, I was such an oversharer. And, like, I would literally actually come home and then overshare on TikTok about how I overshared on my date. Like, I would just, like, come home and be like, so this is the date that I just went on. And here,
so
yeah, I know. Well, trust me, I had a few texts from the guys too being like, hey, I saw your TikTok. I'm like, What's your account so I could block you real quick? but yeah, like I was the same way. I would overshare. But you know what? I've shared this story a few times. I'll say it again for anyone who's a new listener that's listening to this episode. And of course, it'd be the first time you're hearing it. I used to really like kind of beat myself up over it. Like I would go home from a date. And again, sober. So I'm well aware of like what I'm saying and doing. And I'm like, why do I overshare so much? Like, why did I need to say all of that? Like, why? Like, I don't, it's like they ask a question. The answer could be yes or no, but I gave them a thesis on why, like, you know what I mean? And so I hated that I would talk so much. But like, when you really think about it, it's like, I'm a podcast host. Talking is my job. Like, it's just who I am. I used to get straight A's and then a C in conduct because I couldn't stop talking. Like, I'm just a talkative person. Long story short, I met my now fiance. And of course, you know, once we started dating, I did what every girl does when they like have a boyfriend. It's like, so what did you like about me on the first date? Why did we keep going out? Why did you like me? What were your favorite things about me? And he said to me, I loved how talkative you were. He was like, you made it our first date just like so easy because like it could be awkward and uncomfortable. Like we were like set up on pretty much a blind date. Like, so it could be really uncomfortable. We didn't like meet on a dating app where we talked for weeks and like whatever. Like it was just like straight off the bat, starting from scratch. Even when we did text, we were like, if ever a question was asked, we were like, let's table that for when we meet and we'll talk about it. So like we were fully going from scratch. And that could be a little uncomfortable and a little awkward. And he was like, you were so down to earth, so easy to talk to. I love that you talked a lot. And like, we just like, we had conversations all night. Long story short, moral of the story is like, you know, the things that like you might say now, like, oh my God, why did I do that? Why did I overshare? Whatever. Like someone is going to find to be the most beautiful thing about you and the most endearing thing about you. And so that's what happened for me. And I used to hate that I talk so much, but listen, it got me a husband. So I
and a career.
Can't be a man and a career. So there you go.
No, I love that.
So that is really that then. Any last words that you would like to share with the girls before we log off?
No, just be yourself. Just be yourself. There is no right and wrong in dating. My only wrong was drinking. You know, that's from my experience. And yeah. I want to share this to the single girls. So I'm single and I know it can feel really, really lonely. And I just don't want anyone to give up, you know, before a miracle happens. And this is what's been helping me. Okay. I'm 35 years old. I'm single and it's very easy for me to compare myself to women who are younger and getting married and having kids. And this is what helps. So I said to myself, let's say I'm 40 years old. And I meet the love of my life and I regret the last 5 years of obsessing about shitbags and losers and trying to get them to like me and missing out on career opportunities. Just know that it's coming and don't regret or regret not having fun in your single days, because my best friends are my boyfriends. My girlfriends are the loves of my life. I travel with them. I treat them like a romantic partner. We do really romantic things together. And that's what's really helped me be okay in my sobriety. It's just you don't ever want to look back and regret being and having fun being single. Because if you ask a lot of people who are in relationships that have been relationship, I mean, I have tons of clients that have been are relationships forever. They're like, just enjoy your single days. Just enjoy your single days. And I want to enjoy those. And you know, it's never too late. So I hope that helps, because I struggle with that sometimes and I get in really sad, lonely holes. But just know that if you are feeling good and amazing and confident and you know, there's no chance you're gonna die alone, and to have fun along the way. And don't put any of your energy into losers, please. Just don't.
Title of the episode, don't put your energy,
into loser.
I love that, Catherine. Thank you so much for sharing. So where can all of the girls connect with you and find you online?
Yeah, so my personal TikTok is Catherine Souser, same with my Instagram. And then Sober Fit Girl is the Sober Fit Girl on Instagram. And the Sober Fit Girl podcast is all – we talk about sober dating, healing, trauma, fitness, all the great things. So you can find me there.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.